Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, Prohibition is set to end in Disneyland, mobile ordering expands.
Details about the new cantina, we say farewell to some favorites and more. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of September 5th, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Therese Urban. We would like to send a shout out to Colleen and Eric for becoming our newest patrons. One of the many great perks that our patrons get is access to monthly live streams of the show, which in fact, this episode right now is being live streamed for our cast member and above levels.
We're working towards some new goals for when we hit certain milestones of support. We're just $43 away from our next goal. To find out more about this and other new milestones, head on over to DisneylandWeekly.com/support.
All right, now it's time for my favorite part of our live stream show. We get to reach into the Mickey hat ears to pick out who our next guest patron is going to be.
Bubble, bubble, so, toil and trouble.
Drum roll,
do
please.
Do the thing in the cauldron. Is that who it is?
No, we won't go with that one because it fell out.
Okay. Oh, you got to put it back in. That's not fair. And all it is.
Okay, it apparently was fate because I picked one and then he told me how to put it back. I picked the same one again. Congratulations, Gretchen.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Gretchen. Yay.
We will be in contact with you to see if you would like to keep your spot with us. If not, no hard feelings. You can go ahead and pass and we'll just pick another name out of the hat.
Well, congratulations, Gretchen. Now let's get to the news.
We dare not stop.
Always the drum.
So let the paint be spread.
With many the roses red.
And many a tear we shed.
Because we know.
Oh, they'll cease to grow.
In fact, they'll soon be dead.
Oh, and yet we go ahead.
Painting the roses red.
We planted the white roses by mistake.
And the queen, she likes them red. If she saw white instead,
she'd raise a fuss.
Oh, and each of us
would quickly lose his head.
Since this is the thought we dread, we're painting the roses red.
In a bit of sad news, Disney California Adventure will not be the same during your next visit to the parks. As of September 4th, our favorite insects over in A Bug's Land have officially been exterminated to make way for a new Marvel Land. A moment of silence for Flick, Atta, Dot, Francis, Slim, Gypsy, Manny, Rosie, Tuck and Roll, and of course, Heimlich. Oh, he's so sad.
Yeah, so it is going to be so strange visiting California Adventure next year and not having Bug's Land there. I don't quite know how to feel about that. I mean, I'm very excited about the potential for Marvel Land, but I'm just going to miss the bugs. I loved the theming of that area. It was brilliant.
It was very themed very well. I saw a news story earlier that I thought was interesting. They were talking about how A Bug's Land was thrown into development like right away after California Adventure opened because mm-hmm. there was a lack of, you know, children's rides.
Yep.
And then so was Tower of Terror, but both of these things that were rushed into production will be no more.
I know. It's sad.
Well, in a way, there will still be bugs in A Bug's Land because Ant-Man, Wasp.
Is Ant-Man coming to our park?
I'm just saying.
Because I heard that he's going to one of the
Ant-Man
overseas
is Marvel.
Parks. It is true.
I'm just saying he will probably be there. He may not have an attraction, but he will be there.
He could be.
Yeah.
He could be. We'll find out. Well, Disneyland has announced the blackout dates for next August, meaning annual pass holders can now make plans to see Galaxy's Edge without purchasing an additional ticket. Deluxe annual pass holders will be able to get a first look on Monday, August 19th. Southern California pass holders can get in a week later.
Now, in case there's any confusion here, annual pass holders can get in and see Galaxy's Edge whenever. They just have to buy a ticket.
Correct.
They're just blocked out for Deluxe. And Southern California are just blocked out for those days. So you can buy a ticket to get in, but if you don't, if you just want to wait till your pass comes up, you have to wait till then. So all of these people, so we're actually going to be there just a little bit after this, and so I think we'll have a whole nother rush when we're there because it'll be all the people coming that were blocked out.
That is very true. I'm surprised that they're opening it to annual pass holders this quickly. That's awesome for annual pass holders. I really thought that they were going to be blocked out for quite some time, but...
Well, the good news about this is that it means that it will definitely be open by August. Do you know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't open blackouts if
that's
it's going to
be
delayed.
That's true.
Well, details have been released about the cantina that will be in Galaxy's Edge. The new cantina will be run by an alien named Ogagara and will serve pilots, smugglers, bounty hunters, locals, and galactic travelers alike. Oga's Cantina will be a family-friendly place that will serve themed specialty drinks for both kids and adults. You may see a familiar face over at Oga's. RX24, or Rex, has been put to work as the Cantina DJ. You may remember him from Star Tours, where he was a pilot.
Isn't that interesting? I thought that was so clever that they're kind of bringing over some of the old storylines to kind of tie it in. I thought that was really, really cool of them.
Yeah, I like the idea of this. I like that it's going to be family-friendly. I'm really curious to see how this turns out, because they said that the whole Galaxy's Edge is supposed to be really themed well and have a bunch of characters and stuff around. Yes. And I'm just wondering how that's going to work, because you're supposed to feel like you're...
Yeah, there. I really feel like the people working behind the counter or behind the bar are going to be in like full costume, full makeup, full character. I also think there's going to be people probably in the cantina that are going to kind of be like patrons, I guess would be a good way to say it, or other customers that are going to be... interacting with the guests, but they're really, you know, in full makeup, full costume, full character. I think it's going to be a really, really neat and a very immersive experience.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, like it or not, Disneyland is going to start serving alcohol in the parks outside of Club 33 for the first time in the resort history. Guests will be able to buy the themed drinks in Galaxy's Edge when it opens over at Oga's Cantina. They do come with restrictions, though. The alcohol cannot leave the cantina where it is going to be able to be purchased. So I thought that was kind of interesting, just because a lot of people are a little upset by this news, since, when Walt opened the park originally, he purposely left alcohol out of the park because he wanted to make sure that it was family friendly. So I think that this is kind of a nice halfway point. You're still serving adult beverages, but you don't have to worry about people all over the streets, so to say, with the beverages. And quite frankly, I'm sure these are not going to be cheap beverages, so I can't imagine people are going to be consuming too many of them and acting a little extra silly while they're there during their stay.
I am still not a fan. I am in camp no alcohol.
You're in camp no alcohol.
I am in camp no alcohol. I thought I was actually a little disappointed when California Adventure allowed alcohol, because I thought that that kind of went against the spirit of the park, like of the resort in general. And I feel like Disneyland was always kind of like a nice sacred kind of spot. I mean, not to say that like people drink before they go in, and like you can run into drunk people anyway, right? Like, if somebody wants to get in there and be drunk, they will. I just don't like the encouragement of it. And I guess maybe for me, and this is kind of getting, a little personal, and why I feel this way is, my middle brother has struggled with problems with alcoholism. And so I guess I look at it that way, and I'm a little stronger on that kind of thing, just because I don't know why people can't just go and have a good time without needing alcohol, I guess. That's just me.
Well, here's something to think about. Have you visited Walt Disney World?
I have visited Disney World.
Walt Disney World, I believe now all of the parks at Walt Disney World do have places that serve alcohol. So I think with it, as long as it's not, kind of all over the place and in your face versus just in there subtly, I think it's still going to be done tastefully.
Oh, yeah.
I guess
back in May, it looks like that Magic Kingdom sells alcohol at every sit-down restaurant now. So I guess Disneyland was the last holdout other than Club 33.
But the nice thing is, though, you don't have to worry about people, we said earlier, you don't have to worry about people walking around with open containers like they do in California Adventure, because they will have to finish their beverages before they're able to leave the cantina.
And I wonder if there's also going to be like a limit, you can only buy so many or whatever. Because I know sometimes there's also limits too, like you can only buy two or whatever.
Well, quite frankly, how expensive do you think these drinks are going to be?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
The other thing that I read too that I thought was interesting is the only alcohol that you can purchase is in the form of these specialty drinks. So you can't just go up and order
a beer,
a gin and tonic, or whatever. You can't order regular bar drinks, I guess we'll call
them. Standard over-the-counter drinks.
Yeah, yeah. It's only these specialty drinks. So who knows? Since they're only the specialty drinks, I'm sure they're monitoring how much alcohol is actually in each of these drinks. So they might not even be that strong.
That's true. Well, for those of you listening, send us some feedback. What do you guys think about this? I've seen lots of comments online. I kind of want to know what our listeners think. So send us your feedback and what you think of the whole thing. Feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Well, mobile ordering is expanding to more locations across California Adventure and Disneyland. Bayside Brews at California Adventure Park, as well as Harbor Galley and the Tiki Juice Bar at Disneyland, began offering mobile ordering last week. This is not a drill. Dole Whip is now available with the touch of a button. Next month, expect to see mobile ordering expand even further to include Edelweiss Snacks, Stage Door Cafe, Refreshment Corner, and Royal Street Veranda at Disneyland Park. So I like this. I know Habby, one of our listeners, was just in the park, and I think he actually took advantage of the Dole Whip.
I don't remember if it was specifically Dole Whip, but yeah, it was funny because he kind of forgot that it was an option to do the mobile ordering and remembered like halfway through the trip, it seemed like, that you're like, oh yeah, that's right. And honestly, that's going to be me the next time we're there. I'm going to completely forget that it's even an option because I'm not used to it. It's something totally new.
I'm going to remind you because I hate waiting in lines. I'm going to be like, okay, mobile app.
Fair enough.
I also told James, I said, one of the things I want to buy, and I don't know if we've even talked about them on the show ever, but Doug's going to laugh at me when I say this. The Tim Tracker talks about them in Disney World a lot.
Oh, the Tim Tracker, you say?
I love the Tim Tracker. Leave me alone. He always talks about the fuel rods. So they have fuel rods all over the park. So what you do is you pay, if you buy them beforehand, they're like $20 online. They ship them to you. They're those little power things.
Yeah.
And then when you take them to the park, you get unlimited. You just turn it in and get a new one. And of course, with the Disney Experience app and the Play Disney app, that's all, and all this mobile ordering, you're going to need more battery juice than what your phone probably has. So I told you, I said, I got to buy one of these before we go because it's $20 if you order it off their website. It's $30 if you buy it at the park. Mm. With these mobile orderings, I'm going to be there with like four battery things plugged in. You're going to be laughing. You're going to be like, Tank, what's in your backpack? Oh, it's all battery packs.
Battery powered. Well, a sneak peek of the new menu for Tropical Hideaway sounds very delicious and unique. Three different types of warm steam bao buns will be available. They are spiced vegetable bao, kefir lime chicken bao, and bulgogi beef bao. Paired with a chilled ramen salad, and for dessert, you can try the sweet pineapple lumpia, a spring roll filled with pineapple and sweet cream cheese.
Congratulations. I think Teresa deserves a round of applause for that one.
Happy dance.
Nice work. I will say the bulgogi beef bao, say that five times fast. That's a lot of
buh, that buh, one's buh. Really fun to say. Is that it? Was my favorite one to say. Yeah.
So do these, I mean, you're the foodie between the two of us. Are you excited by these? Have you had a bao before?
No, I haven't. So I'm excited for two different reasons. I'm excited because they sound very very different and very unique to me. It's something I've never tried before. None of them sound bad to me. And I'm just very curious what some of these things are. But definitely trying that sweet pineapple dessert.
Yeah, definitely. Pineapple, I thought for a long time that I didn't like pineapple, but I've really come around and I really like a lot of pineapple stuff now. So,
well, congratulations.
All right, well, now we're going to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with Disney trivia. James will read us the questions and we'll attempt to answer them, and then James gives us the answers after the discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, James?
Well, I think we're going to start off a little easy and then we'll work our way up.
We're good with easy.
So, the Yeti and the Matterhorn is a recycled animatronic from which attraction? Based on the looks on your face, we are not starting off easy. No.
If you're watching the live stream, you just saw me
both of us
sit here and go blink, blink, blink.
I didn't know that was a recycled.
So recycled animatronic. I guess we should take a guess.
Wait a minute.
An old attraction?
Can you
still
please
existing?
Restate the question?
The Yeti and the Matterhorn is a recycled animatronic from which attraction?
The current Yeti.
I would guess Yetis of the past, likely.
Is a recycled?
I think, if I remember right, and this is totally me shooting off the cuff, it might have come in around 1991.
The America Sings. No. No.
Well, America Sings would be something that had a bunch of animatronics. Oh, it's... I'm going to go crazy. You ready?
Crazy.
Abraham Lincoln.
What?
It could be his skeleton reprogrammed.
Oh, good Lord.
He definitely bought into crazy.
Next question.
All right. This is totally an estimate. How many churros are sold annually in the parks?
Oh, my. Annually?
What are we rounding to?
Billions.
The nearest 100,000.
100,000? They don't break a million?
Churros. No, because it could be 4 million, 4.1 million. That'd be 100,000. So let's say...
5.6 million.
No, not that many. 1.2 million.
Interesting guesses.
We're probably nowhere near.
It's probably like 500,000.
No, are you kidding me?
It's like based on how many churros we eat at the park, it can't be that low.
Well, who knows?
Plus families, they have to buy one for each of the children, each of the members of the family.
Okay.
That's a lot of churros.
Okay.
We may have guessed too low.
Maybe. I don't know. I always feel like I guess too high, so I'm trying to go low. I'm trying to go crazy this week. It'll be crazy Tig's answers.
You really are. All right, so our next question was submitted to us by a listener from Samantha and Bo.
Ooh.
So their question is, hidden Mickeys are everywhere in Disneyland, but what is the location of the only hidden Donald Duck?
I thought you were gonna ask. I got a reply for you. This is a trivia question for you. And actually, this could be for you too, Teresa. There's a hidden Walt.
Ooh.
Where is the hidden Walt?
I'm going to say Abe Lincoln.
Wow. 1.2 million?
1.2 million is where hidden Walt Disney is?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
A hidden Donald.
Hidden Donald.
I'm going to say...
Somewhere on Main Street.
Pirates.
Somewhere on Main Street.
I'm going to go with Pirates.
I'm going really wide on this one. Somewhere on Main Street.
So as Tag has announced on this live stream, tonight when we're recording is actually our anniversary. So in honor of that...
Oh, boy.
Did you know the current voices of Disneyland and Disney California Adventure are married? Who are they?
Oh, dear Lord. Oh, God. A Mr. Disneyland and a Mrs. California Adventure. I don't know.
Actually, I think they do have those nicknames, so you are technically correct.
Half right.
You're not supposed to give us the answer yet. But that is, yeah, because it's the chick who does, like before Fantasmic, she goes, your friend and host Mickey Mouse. It's like her and the guy who's like, welcome to Disneyland. You know, the guy who's like the voice of Disneyland. They're awesome. They were on a panel. I have no idea what their names are.
Just spitting out all sorts of random information.
I know stuff
about
them.
The
I just
people.
Don't know their name.
I guess I'm living up to my stumping premise. That was my fourth question. We'll see
who again. Who was the person who sent us that stuff?
That was from Samantha and Bo.
That was good.
Samantha and Bo, thank you for sending stuff in.
Good question. You stumped us.
Yes. And I will say, if you want to submit a trivia question, just like Samantha and Bo did, you can send it to producer@disneylandweekly.com. James is the only one that gets those emails, so we will not have spoiled answers.
As you can tell based on their reaction.
Yes, as you can tell based on our reaction. So, definitely send that to producer@disneylandweekly.com, and James will be happy to find that out.
You know, I'm not so sure about this. We're going to have to switch the title of the segment. It needs to be, it's worse than stumping us, because we haven't really gotten any right.
you got it. Okay.
Confuse the Disney trivia.
You got
host.
Two of them last week. You did pretty well the first week.
Are you keeping
week.
Track?
Yeah, I have a running list of questions I asked, of course. I should really keep score between the two of you.
Oh, dear.
Oh. Well, see, the thing is you're picking very obscure Disney trivia.
That's what he's trying to stump us.
That's true.
Please stay tuned for the correct answers from James at the end of the show.
All right. Because
clearly you did not hear it from me.
Correct.
All right, so next we're actually doing something a little bit different this week. We have two very special guests on with us. We have Mike, who is the head of Concierge, and his friend Eric, and they've got some exciting news to kind of share with us today.
Very exciting. So how are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing great.
Absolutely. So a lot of our listeners know from being on the pod or like hearing on the podcast, and also if they're supporters in the chat, that everybody knows James from Concierge. So mm-hmm. Mike, so you're kind of you are the head guy at Concierge, is that right?
Yes, that's my title. I'm the head concierge. I'm also the founder of the company, and James has had an awesome time working with you guys and has nothing but great things to say about your podcast and especially your listeners. You have some awesome listeners and he's just having a blast, especially in the chats with everyone.
Right. And then Eric, we actually have not talked to you before. So kind of give us a little background about who you are.
Well, I'm actually a Disneyland Weekly listener, recently converted.
Nice.
But, yeah, I've been listening for the last couple months, and you know, I really like the show. I've been doing a fair amount of Run Disney races over the last few years with my wife, Brandy, and kind of fell in with the concierge crowd over the last year or so as they helped book a few of our vacation packages.
And they've done a great job. They've been working hard. Like we said in our last podcast episode, they've been working really hard for us to get us our D23 things. And actually, I think this week we will officially be booked into a hotel with tickets with them. So I'm sure James is very excited to finally get that trigger pulled for that. So, Mike, you kind of came to us a few weeks ago about after James was on the show, and you kind of had this whole idea with Run Disney and running. So why don't you kind of tell our listeners what kind of the big plan is that you have?
Yeah, thanks. So I had the opportunity in April to do my first Run Disney event, and it was a fun time with my family. My daughter graduated from high school this year, and so it was kind of a last hurrah event, and it was in April. And so it was just such an impactful and meaningful trip for us, especially when you go to the parks all the time. Having, you know, a super magical trip is, you know, that doesn't happen every time, right? I mean, right. When you go all the time, it's always fun and you always enjoy it and you're always making memories. But to make a top 10 trip, you know, that takes something special. And the Run Disney really just did that for our family. And it wasn't just our family. We did it with another family as well. And we started training months and months ahead of time and researching everything. And it was just such an enjoyable experience. It was about 5 minutes after I finished that event that I knew we had to do something else. We had to take it to the next level. And things started progressing. And I thought, you know, we have such amazing podcast partners with Disneyland Weekly and The Sweep Spot, the Jiminy Crickets podcast, that I knew that, hey, this is a great opportunity. There's got to be some people out there who've never experienced a Run Disney event that would enjoy it like we did, but maybe just don't have the support or it's kind of seems intimidating to them. And at Concierge, we're all about trying to help people have the best Disney experiences, see what the best is that Disney has to offer and bring that to families. And I knew that there was something with Run Disney that we should do. So I reached out to Eric and Brandy. They quickly came to mind for the amount of trips that we had booked with them that were Run Disney related. I knew they had a bunch of experience and he had helped me during my training period and said, hey, are you guys interested in kind of helping moderate a group like this? And it took all of about 5 seconds for them to jump on board and get rolling. So that's kind of where we're moving.
Nice. Yeah, I know you said about like being intimidated and stuff. And I can tell you from my experience, I ran my first or my second, I guess, 5K this beginning of the summer. And it definitely takes a lot of preparation. If you don't have a group of people with you, it is very easy to fall out and not want to do it. Ever since we did the 5K, we were actually in a class leading up to it. And after that, we kind of, because we didn't have that class and that kind of support structure, we kind of stopped running. And so definitely something like this, the group, you're totally right, that, you know, a group that people are all excited, they're all there for the same thing. So in this case, it's great because it's all Disney fans and it's Run Disney and like, you know, and getting everybody together. And the cool thing that you kind of talked about before off the air with us was the fact that trying to get some of the podcast hosts from the various podcasts there, so you could actually meet some podcast hosts that you listen to in person, which I know for me, totally awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely, we'd love some of our podcast hosts there. And while it may work to get there for some, and it may not work for others, Disney's got a great option this year for really everybody to get involved. And this gives me an opportunity. Let me throw it over to you, Eric. Why don't you talk quickly about the events that we're kind of training for and working towards, the two options that are there and available?
There are a lot of different events that are coming up, although the main one that we're focusing on right now is a good distance out. I mean, if you really want to get ready for the Wine and Dine or the Disney Marathon, go for it. What we're trying to focus on is the upcoming Star Wars runs in April. Of 2019, Disney has set up this whole Rivals Weekend thing where they used to have an East Coast and West Coast rivalry going on. The West Coast was the light side, East Coast was the dark side. Personally, my wife and I have only ever run the light side, which was difficult for me as someone who dresses up as a Sith Lord while he goes for a run. So they decided to combine things this year because there aren't any Run Disney events happening on the West Coast for the next couple of years, probably while they're getting all that construction done. So what they've got is a whole series of events happening where you can do your 5K, your 10K, your half marathon, like usual on the East Coast. They've got all the kids races. They have all the normal stuff, but then they added in this additional virtual half marathon that we haven't seen before, which is kind of a cool additional option. You can do this as an add-on to your regular race, if you're doing the rest of the events, or you can do it on your own. If that's the only thing you want to do, you can still do the virtual half marathon on your own at home in your own community and still get a cool medal and all sorts of other sweet swag.
I am all about the swag, and so is Teresa, I know.
Yes.
So this would be cool. Is this something that you're interested in doing?
So I actually was looking into this, and the thing that I thought was really cool and really interesting and helps people that may be feeling intimidated about maybe doing their first race is, unlike most sanctioned events, this virtual half marathon does not have any sort of like time limit. So you can walk this half marathon. You can break it up over a couple of days even if you want. Basically, it's just kind of promoting for you to get up and get active. And as long as you complete the 13 plus miles, I think it's 13.1 miles, then you qualify and you have finished, quote unquote, this race. And I think that is just so cool. Because I know a lot of people, when they think 13.1 miles, they just kind of
freeze up.
Stop. I mean, that's all they read is the how far it is and that's it. But this is just so, so cool to me that you have basically as much time as you would like to take. There is, of course, a certain period of time that you have to do it in. So it's not like you have the entire year to complete your 13 miles. But still, just the fact that you can split it up over a couple of days, I think, is so awesome.
I agree, because I think to me, the idea of a half marathon, a 13.1 mile thing, terrifies me because that's a long distance. It was very hard to do the 5K, and a 5K is only what, 3.1 miles, and this is 30, that's 10 more miles basically. And so that's a little rough for some people, but I agree with you, Teresa, and I like the idea that they're just trying to get people active. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's all about, is just getting your butt out of the chair or off the couch or whatever and get out and do something. And if you have a love for Disney, which everybody who's listening to this I'm sure does,
I would think so.
I would hope so. Unless maybe they just stumbled upon this and they can't get out somehow, but I think that doing that would be good and kind of a motivator. And then the fact that it would be getting everybody together with other Disney fans to do this stuff through the partnership with Concierge, I think is great.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if you go into your first half marathon not thinking it's an overwhelming task, then there's something wrong with you.
Very true.
Yes, but I can tell you, last year, my entire family, which is my two teenagers, my wife and I, neither one of us were consistent runners. We go out for the occasional jog here or there. And we started in about November and easily were set and ready for the April Run Disney events and at the half marathon level. Again, there's 5Ks, 10Ks, or even one of my favorite is the diaper dash, which is for 12 months and under. It's a crawling race that they have.
That's awesome.
It's truly an event for the entire family and makes for just an amazing vacation.
There's something for everybody, the diaper dad. Maybe I'll do the diaper dad.
Well, the other cool thing, too, is if you're, active, or if this sounds like something that you may want to try, the other thing, so this is totally the Disney nerd side of me talking right now, is you get to run through the parks when there's really not very many other people in the park. So you get to see the parks in a totally different, I guess, light. And the other cool thing, too, is you can actually run through some of the backstage areas, too. So for me, I would just do it so I could see some of the behind the scenes stuff. I would force myself through all those miles just to be able to see things that you don't normally get to see.
Now, one thing, so Teresa's boyfriend, Vern, actually has done a Run Disney run.
Yes, and, he did the marathon in January.
And something that he brought up that I thought was interesting was that along the route, you get to meet, there's like photo ops with all the characters and stuff.
Tons.
So how does that, I guess, affect the race?
If you're really into doing the characters and the whole meet and greet thing, you've got to have a plan for it. If you're really interested in getting a personal record on your run, maybe meeting characters isn't for you, but everybody seems to have their level of comfortability. So if you want to meet characters, you just set aside that time. You know that you've got a decent amount of time to get this run done. Really, all the runs have a pacing time of 16 minutes per mile. So a lot of people plan that time ahead. You know, this is a Disney run. You're not trying to get your personal best here for most people. So you can set aside that time. You can meet some cool characters. I know when I did the Avengers run last year, my goal, since I was dressed up in a Doctor Strange costume, if there was a Doctor Strange along the way, I was going to meet him. I didn't care how long I had to wait in line. and that's it. Sometimes you have to wait in line. Sometimes you don't. You build the time in, or you can do what Brandy and I have kind of stumbled upon, where a lot of people will do the double races. So if you do one of the challenges, like the Rival Run challenge that they have for this upcoming race, you sign up to do the 10K and the half marathon. So a lot of the characters cross over between the two. So you can pick which race you want to meet characters on. You know, one can be your fast race. The other one can be your character meet and race.
Yeah, because I know from pictures I've seen of people that have run these races and from Vern telling his experience, there's a ton of characters. You get to see the parks, like Teresa said, in a whole different light. So I guess for both of you, since you've both done a Run Disney event, I guess, so we'll start with you, Eric, since you probably have the most experience with Run Disney events. What's kind of been the highlight for you? Like, what keeps you coming back to these Run Disney events as opposed to just a regular marathon or running event?
So the best part about Run Disney events for me is that these races are the best put together races I've ever been in. They're just so well organized. There's a slight learning curve for anything, but once you figure out where to get your race packet and all that stuff, that's easy. That's the day before the race. Race day, you show up, everything's well prepared. The route is completely clear. You're ready to go. And Disney pulls out all the stops. The route is well designed. It's well organized. And then, like we've said a few times here, you get to run through the parks. And that's something you really can't do most of the time. Going backstage at Disneyland, I know I shouldn't bring that up since we can't do that on this particular run, but it's amazing just going backstage and seeing some of the stuff. They bring out old ride vehicles and other equipment just to set along the side of the road so you can run by and you're like, wait a second, that's a Skyway bucket. That's a Matterhorn bobsled. You know, all these things that you know they don't have sitting around backstage every day, but they set things up along the route so you have something cool to look at and something cool to tell your friends about, and it really helps solidify it in my mind as one of the best race experiences out there.
Well, I think I'm sold. Backstage stuff you don't see all the time. That's right up my alley. So, Mike, what about you?
For me, it's a family experience, and that it's really kind of open to anybody at any level. I mean, as you can probably tell, Eric's using words like PRs, okay? Like, I don't even know what a PR is, right?
I didn't abbreviate it, okay? I mean...
Okay, that's right. But for me, you know, it was just all about the entire experience. And you show up early in the morning and there was a DJ who was in a white suit that was Stormtrooper, you know, paraphernalia all over his suit. Like, it was just awesome. It's just a great, great time. The weekend leading up to it over at the ESPN zone, they've got, you know, all kinds of stuff for sale, trinkets and that kind of stuff. It's just a fun experience the whole weekend. And it doesn't matter if you're there running your heart out or if you're just there to try to finish. And if you're afraid that you're going to be walking throughout the run, you're not the only person. I would say there's a significant portion of the people that do a significant run walk part of that event. And in fact, the balloon lady who are the people that round out the event, they are walking at about a 16-minute pace. And so you've got plenty of time. If you put in a little bit of the work there in the training, you can go and just have a great experience and, you know, make a memory for a long time.
We've covered what it is, what you guys hope to do. So how can our listeners become a part of this?
It's very simple to get involved. We have a Facebook group that's going to be our primary way of communicating. Again, Brandy and Eric are both going to be kind of heading that up and moderating it. Whether you want to do the virtual race and kind of do your training at home, or if you want to actually get out to Disney World and be a part of that, you know, of course, concierge and the team would love to help you, you know, plan that vacation. I'm sure James is just, you know, waiting in the wings to jump on any opportunities to get you set up with that. And we've got some exciting kind of bonuses we want to do, like we talked about trying to get together and meet everybody when we're down there at Disney World. It really is just a group to encourage, to give advice on training. Eric and Brandy's favorite part, you know, costume design, really everybody's favorite part, costume design. So any questions? I remember last year when I did mine earlier this year, I spent hours like sifting through YouTubes and things like that to try to understand what was going to happen the morning of the event. And having people beside you, it's going to make a big difference. So just come get involved. We'll send the link and everything to you for the show notes. We'll have it off of our Facebook page as well and our website.
That sounds great.
It does sound great. So, Mike, did you dress up?
I did. I was kind of boring. I was more standard Imperial trooper. Or what is it? What is the guy that, you know, just rank on their shirt and look pretty boring?
Oh, okay. Yeah. The standard Imperial officer.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Hey, I don't know. Every time that I see people running in costume, I give them mad props because you think it would be easy and you think you design something that's going to be comfortable for that long. But then, unfortunately, a couple miles in, you're horribly, horribly wrong, and now you're stuck wearing this outfit. So the people that spend the time to figure out what's going to be comfortable and what's going to look good, mad props. So good job for you. Good for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only behind my costume was a little bit more comfortable kind of situation. But seeing all the costumes out there is half the fun, too. There was a guy. I'm not the smallest dude out there. I'm kind of a big guy, and there was a fellow big guy out there who was wearing a, no kidding, like a skin tight white Princess Leia full length, you know, with his hair in a buns. And it was, I was like, how is this guy doing this? But
man,
it was fun to watch.
The confidence
him.
That guy has to have had.
Exactly. And he was having trouble making it through the race because every like 3 minutes, someone wanted to stop and take a picture with him. So
right.
He had this full beard too. It was just great. So wow. A lot of fun stuff.
Wow.
Forget about the characters. They wanted their photo with that guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
How about you, Eric? What did you go as, you and your wife?
Well, our one Star Wars experience, we went and did a light side out in California, and Brandy went as Rey. She does tend toward more toward the light side of things. And I went as Kylo Ren. So a little bit warmer of a costume, but I think Mike's idea there of doing the Leia, that might give me a second idea for a costume here. Pretty good.
I love it.
For some reason, all I could think of costume-wise was I thought of someone trying to dress like as a full Chewbacca and run,
oh,
and I was like, oh, man. Thank you, Eric and Mike, for coming on, and obviously we will be pushing this out to everybody mm-hmm. and bringing it up probably weekly on the show just to talk about, to get more people in there. Is there a time frame you're looking at for like a cutoff if people wanted to get involved?
Not really. They did just open the registration portion for Disney World runs for Rivals Weekend. The virtual is also open now as well, but those spots are limited. So the Rivals Weekend will fill up at some point. It almost always does. And so, you know, getting booked into those earlier is always better.
And with concierge, you guys can help get people registered for that?
Absolutely. But you don't have to be registered to join the group. Again, this is, you know, we're looking for, you know, people just want to have a great time with this Run Disney. And, you know, if you want to get together and start some training and then see how you feel, that's completely fine.
The other thing that I think this group will be great for, too, is maybe if you're somebody who's always kind of thought maybe a Run Disney event sounds like something you'd want to do, but you just kind of are overwhelmed with the idea, maybe aren't sure exactly what it is, you know, I'm sure go ahead, follow the group and just kind of get a feel for it and, you know, ask those questions that you've been wanting to ask. These guys have experience with doing Run Disney events, so they just have a wealth of knowledge that they'd be able to help you with and maybe help make up your mind as to if it's something you really would like to do.
Run Disney events are a really great way to get involved in running, and it's a great first running event. It really was my first race ever, was the Tower of Terror 10 miler a few years ago. And, you know, even if it's not your first half marathon, it's a great way to get involved in something. 5K, 10K, whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, it's a family thing. And I think with the group specifically, if you're somebody who maybe doesn't have somebody to run with, and maybe you wanted to go do a Run Disney event, but nobody, like none of your friends or whatever would like do it with you, you could make friends through this group. Mm-hmm. And all go, you know, because you'll meet up with everybody at the event, for those of you who want to go through. So I think it's a great idea. I'm really excited for it, Mike. I'm really glad you and Eric brought this to us, because, you know, I went through the journey earlier this year with trying to do my second 5K. I keep saying first because my other one was a long time ago. But but it was nice to do it. And, of course, my love of Disney, my want to be healthy with running, because of all the different exercises, to me, running is the least, not effort, it's just you don't need a lot of stuff. You know, you can just go, you just need good shoes and you know, some clothing that is comfortable, and you can just go out and you can do it almost anywhere. So why not do it at a Disney park?
Absolutely.
Well, if Run Disney with Concierge is like planning a regular trip with Concierge, it's going to be awesome. So,
and it's going to be smooth.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. And Mike, I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the future. I know we've talked about having you on the podcast in the future to talk about some Disney World stuff. In fact, one of the show topics that somebody sent in that I thought was interesting was planning a Disneyland trip for someone who's only been to Disney World.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So I figured that might be a good discussion topic to have you on for.
There are a couple differences.
And then Eric, also nice meeting you. Thanks for bringing your expertise to the discussion here, and we look forward to talking more as we get closer to the race here, and hopefully in the group.
All right, great to meet you two. I'll be around.
Thanks, right. Eric and Mike.
Thank you.
All right, so on to our discussion topic for this week. We're going to discuss what we believe makes a good dark ride. So I think first we should start by defining what a dark ride is, because I know I was confused by this, and I know Tag was also. We kind of, when we think of the word dark ride, I really only thought of the dark rides in Fantasyland. I didn't think of anything really outside of that.
Wikipedia says, a dark ride is an indoor amusement ride on which passengers board guided vehicles that travel through specially lit scenes that typically contain animation, sound, music, and special effects. So this part, we're actually going to keep producer James on, because Teresa and I have opinions, but James has lots of opinions on dark rides.
I love dark rides. That is like my favorite part of going to Disney.
So what, for you, what is your definition of a dark ride?
I guess I live in the world that you do, where it's kind of the Fantasyland style stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of the other attractions are generally a little too thrilling to really kind of have that pull. But I think you get kind of into a gray area when you talk about like Haunted Mansion and Pirates, where I'm like, I think those really fit the idea and the spirit behind a dark ride.
I agree. So according to what the definition for a dark ride is, we were thinking, all three of us were thinking far too small, because things like Indiana Jones and even Splash Mountain, parts of Splash Mountain are technically considered a dark ride. Yep. So a lot more things that are, I consider like the thrill rides, are also technically dark rides. So that was really interesting to me, a little eye-opening too.
In my mind, in terms of Disneyland, mm-hmm. I think of like Splash Mountain, Radiator Springs Racers, Indiana Jones. I think of those as like adventure rides. And when I think dark ride, I think, like you said, Fantasyland. I think like the original kind of classic. Although, and I think we disagree on this, because I think you mentioned this before, like I consider Winnie the Pooh a dark ride, because it's got a painted with fluorescent, lots of black light kind of stuff. So it's a very dark ride.
Yeah.
Do people consider It's a Small World a dark ride?
I would say
absolutely.
I would say it's a Small World, a dark ride.
You would say that.
Yeah, for me, how I am going to define a dark ride for the purpose of this podcast is anything that you would consider a dark ride that does not have a seatbelt. So for me, since you are strapped into Indiana Jones, that's a thrill ride. Whereas Pirates is one of those gray areas, you're not strapped
in. Well, Splash, you're not strapped in.
We're forgetting that one. That is a log flume. Splash Mountain is a log flume ride.
Hmm, that's tough. So the question, the discussion question we got was, what makes a good dark ride? And it's tough because when you... I think for me, a lot of, and James, you definitely are going to have probably a different opinion here, but like, I think for me, a lot of my joy in the dark rides is all comes from like nostalgia from like when I was a kid and going through the dark rides, and the fact that they seem to me like they're very classic.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they've been reworked over the years, and my logical brain knows that they're not the original thing that Walt built there, yeah, they're just kind of updated over the time or whatever, I still think of them as being like original opening day Walt worked on this attractions in Fantasyland, except for Winnie the Pooh, because that's not in Fantasyland. But I don't know. I what makes a good dark ride? I think like it has to tell a good story. It can't be too thrilling.
No.
But some of them are kind of scary. Like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Like,
I think most of the dark rides are actually pretty scary. So? Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially look at like Pinocchio, and even kind of Snow White gets a little scary.
Snow White is intense.
Yeah.
It is not called Scary Adventure for nothing.
Well, actually, if you think about the names, that's kind of funny, too, because you get like Snow White's Scary Adventure, mm-hmm, and then you get Pinocchio's Daring Journey. And mm-hmm, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And the only ones that are kind of whatever are Alice in Wonderland, which is just Alice in Wonderland, and Peter Pan's Flight.
Well, don't forget about Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that's one too. But that has a belt or a lap bar.
Yes.
Well, okay. I was thinking about that. We're gonna define that. So if you're strapped in versus a lap bar is different. A lap bar to me is something that's just preventing small children from like escaping.
You're right. All those dark rides do have a lap bar because like, yeah, Peter Pan has a lap bar.
They just don't want the little kids to like run over and say hi to Roger Rabbit or whoever.
Well, or spin
or
out.
Winnie the Pooh or whatever.
Spin out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. What makes a good...
I think some of the other strengths, sure, when you're talking about dark rides, you got to talk about like the quality lighting and the quality sound, yeah, because that can really lead to some magical moments. Like, I think The Little Mermaid is high up on my list for high quality dark rides.
For sure.
Because you get really great character interactions. And then there's the scene with Sebastian and Under the Sea, and that is just a magical moment. And it goes on for a while, and you don't get tired of it.
Well, the thing that's so great about that scene... is it's basically you're looking at the exact same thing, but they kind of make you go through it in different angles, and they kind of focus on different characters as you're going through this room. So it doesn't feel like you're looking at the exact same thing, even though technically you are.
Well, it's like Heffalumps and Woozles in Winnie, mm-hmm, the Pooh is the same way. It's a giant room that you kind, yep, of spin through. You could say that about almost every room you go into in Peter Pan, because you're above London, and then you're above you go all the way around the, mm-hmm, island and stuff. So you are kind of seeing different perspectives on those things.
I think that whole idea is why Peter Pan is always so busy, is because it's so different from the rest of the dark rides that you are flying above everything else. You are getting a perspective unlike anything else.
Well, I think Peter Pan is one of those where it's, in a weird way, it's kind of a thrill ride for kids because, like, there's nothing below you. So it's, you're flying around, and I can tell you there's a couple of those scenes, especially like towards the end where you're kind of coming down.
Yeah.
That, you know, you kind of, it's kind of exhilarating, and it gets to the noise there too. The you know, and you kind of go for, I don't know. So I think maybe that's why that's so popular, because I think that there is something thrilling about being suspended above everything.
Side note, that is another attraction that I would love to be on when it breaks down.
I think you just get stuck there.
I don't know. They have to rescue you. They can't just leave you in there.
You were talking about how you really value a good story. And that's one that always kind of stumps me when I think about Alice in Wonderland. Because when I think of going on that attraction, I just think it's a lot of chaos.
Well, that's kind of Alice in Wonderland, isn't it?
Yeah, but that kind of works for Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
The thing for me with dark rides is I enjoy dark rides more that have, I guess, the storyline is in order or it flows with how the movie goes. I don't enjoy ones that are kind of haphazard and all over the place, just because to me a dark ride is kind of reliving the movie or the feature.
And
so The Little Mermaid is my favorite because I think that that dark ride captures every single aspect of that film beautifully. Some of the other ones, the end, they though, have it seems pieces.
Like they always seem to skimp on the end, I feel like. Because even Little Mermaid, it's like you come around that corner and it's Kiss the Girl. And then, like, Ursula's, like, in the background dying. And then it's, like, happily ever after. Was it Snow White?
I was going to say, that's not as bad as Snow White.
And Snow White, and then there's a rock, and then and they lived happily ever after. And you're like, yeah, what just happened?
That one definitely ends abruptly, for sure.
But the movies kind of end abruptly sometimes, too, though.
Yeah, but the dark rides definitely feel worse of, like, well, we ran out of space, so here's what you get.
Get off now. Goodbye. But, yeah, no, so, yeah, for me, I like the ones that tell the story in totality more so than the ones that kind of just take snippets here and there. I do appreciate Alice in Wonderland, though, just because I like the fact that Alice in Wonderland is not really a point A to point B type story. You can kind of bounce all over the place with Alice in Wonderland. I am a little upset that the tea party scene, though, is one of the last scenes that you see. I wish that they had that in the front.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with that is that's like after you go outside and you kind of lose the magic of being in the scene.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that.
Yep. You have your section outside. So you kind of mentally kind of come back out of it and you're back in the real world. And then suddenly you're in the Mad Tea Party and it's done.
Now, for me, with the what makes a good dark ride, I was thinking about it while you guys were talking. And the reason that I like Peter Pan is because I like that thrill and kind of it's different. You're hanging. There's nothing else at Disneyland where you're hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Except for there's that attraction they're talking about that could be like a Spider-Man-y thing be hanging, yeah. Which would be super cool. But there's no other attraction that's quite like that, so I like it for that because it's so different. And Alice is the same thing for me because I like that you go in at the bottom and then you come out upstairs and you kind of zigzag and you're kind of above everybody, which I think is cool. And that's neat for kids too because they generally are not going to go on things like the Matterhorn or whatever where you get that view. You know, they can go on the monorail, which I guess we give them that view. But in general, kids, you know, that's not going to be that exciting for kids. But you come out and you're kind of above everything, and that's kind of neat. But it does take you out, like you said. But when I think of Snow White and I think of Pinocchio, both of those feel almost identical to me because you're both in the same type of ride vehicle almost.
They are very
similar.
And you
kind of just go through. But I love Mr. Toad because Mr. Toad adds, and I guess Pinocchio does a little bit too, but Mr. Toad adds a lot of like zipping and turning, and there's a lot of set pieces that kind of like move out of your way, like mm-hmm. you're spinning through, and then you've got the room towards the end. Well, first of all, you're on the train tracks or whatever, and that train comes through you, and I think that's cool. And then you go into the end room, and it's you know, it's so hot in there. It can be the middle of winter, and it feels like you're down where you're supposed to be in that scene. That's why I like Mr. Toad. I think if I was going to lose a dark ride, I could lose Pinocchio or Snow White just because I feel like they're both very similar and that there's nothing that really draws me. Like, if I'm hitting up all the dark rides in Fantasyland, they're probably the last two I hit up.
Sure.
And they usually don't have a line.
You know, the thing that I really wish is I think, and I know that they have been revamping, but I wish that they would do it more. So I wish that some of the older dark rides and some of the more classic ones, I wish they'd have a facelift, and I wish that we had, instead of, there's a lot of static figures and a lot of just kind of cutouts, I guess would be a good way of saying it, painted cutouts. I wish that they could spend some money and actually put in, maybe not full-blown amazing animatronics, but something that's more, something that has more movement, something that looks more alive. I think of, with Winnie the Pooh, I feel like there's a lot of cutouts in Winnie the Pooh, and there's a lot of kind of like black light paint. I don't think, like, really that probably wasn't that expensive of a ride. Right. Or attraction for them to put together. Yeah. Now, another one that I think is really well done that everyone kind of forgets about because it's kind of hidden over in Disney California Adventure, but Monsters, Inc. I think that one is neat. There's a lot of, and the thing I think I like the most about it is there's a lot of movement in there. The characters feel like actually saw them. You know, it feels like you see Sully and you see Boo and you see Mike because they're moving, they're animated, they're not just stagnant, they're they're 3D. You could reach out and touch them if you wanted. Yep. Plus, you have Roz at the end who's barking orders at you. One of the last scenes with the doors and just how all of those doors are kind of moving around you. And plus, you have Randall changing colors and it's just awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I also forget about Monsters, Inc. And I guess that's a dark ride. Yeah, I'd categorize that as
totally
a dark ride.
Dark ride.
I like the smells in that one, and I agree with you. I guess the reason to me it doesn't feel like a dark ride is because it is so three-dimensional and mm-hmm. not two-dimensional. And I think all the classics that make me think dark ride are these two-dimensional.
Yeah.
But something that people brought up was that, you know, there's attractions like, you know, they said things like Radiator Springs Racers is a dark ride. Now, you kind of agreed, disagreed?
I kind of disagree because, again, that one's more of a thrill ride yeah. to me. You're strapped in. I can understand how they would say some of the scenes, the indoor scenes, are dark ride-esque, but I think because you have the outdoor racetrack portion of it, that takes away from it being a true dark ride. So same thing with like Splash Mountain. You've got the indoor dark ride-esque scenes, but because you have the outdoor portions and the thrill portions of it, it is not a dark ride for me. I know that some people do say that it is.
Maybe an easier question to answer is, what isn't a dark ride? Because it seems like a lot of people are throwing in things that are dark rides, you know, like Pirates and Haunted and Radiator Springs Racers. So, like, what? Because you could almost say then, if those things, if it just has to be something indoor with animation, sound, music, and special effects, that could be so.
Space Mountain.
So is the Incredicoaster a dark ride now because it has characters?
No. I think a dark ride needs a story, and it has to not be so thrilling. So that's why Space Mountain mm-hmm. is taken out of that one, and that's why you could take out
the Matterhorn.
Yeah.
Because, okay. I mean, there are story, you know, quote-unquote story aspects to those attractions, but it's not, it doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end like the dark rides do.
Gotcha.
And, I mean, and that's why some people can argue that Indiana Jones is a dark ride, because there is a beginning, there is a middle, and there is an ending to that story. But again, to me, it's taken out of the equation just because of the thrill factor for it.
Okay. That makes sense.
Some other ones that I kind of, I guess I lumped them into their own category, but they're actually technically considered dark rides, and the more I think about it, the more it's totally true. Toy Story Midway Mania is technically a dark ride, even though it's an interactive dark ride. And same thing with Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters. And I guess the Astro Blasters is more of a dark ride because you do have a storyline with that as you're going around and shooting things. Midway Mania, there's not really a storyline.
It's just a lot of carnival games.
Yeah, it's just shooting things.
Huh.
But those,
I would never have considered either of those.
I don't know what I would consider that. I never thought of what they would be considered, but I guess they're a dark ride. An interactive dark ride. That's what I'm coining the term if it hasn't been coined already.
Huh.
So here's my question for you is, does length in a dark ride make a difference? You know, something like Pinocchio and Snow White are like 2 to 3 minutes, but, you know, Haunted Mansion Pirates, you're starting to get up 10, 15 minutes. Does that make a difference?
I think it does, because for me, the longer attractions or the longer the dark rides, the more immersed in the world that you get. With, like we were saying, how we feel like some of them end abruptly, the ones that really feel like they end abruptly, unfortunately, are the ones that aren't as long. So I do think it makes a difference.
Yeah, they are, I think, some of the shorter ones for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Pan, though, if you think about Peter Pan's actually a pretty short attraction.
For me, what happens, though, is when I go on these, so we'll say Peter Pan, because we agree we all like Peter Pan. Yeah. We don't think it ends very abruptly. Nope. But honestly, for me, I just get the feeling like I'm totally immersed in the world, and there's the crocodile, and we're done. Like, it doesn't, I wish that there was a little bit more meat, I guess, in that story.
What differentiates, let's say, a dark ride like a Snow White from, like, a carnival haunted house that you ride through that's very similar? It's static, black lighted pictures, you're on a vehicle, maybe you're going through a light storyline. What makes it different? Either of you.
The magic. It's going to be a very generic cop-out answer, but it is. It's the magic. You're getting transported to a place. And the thing for me is that you're getting transported to a familiar place. You've grown up with these characters. You've grown up with Peter Pan, Snow White, maybe not Mr. Toad, because unfortunately nobody watches his movie anymore. But, you know, these are very familiar people that you're kind of like getting to sneak peek into their world, and you feel like you're going on a journey to go visit these characters. Whereas I don't feel like that with a haunted house. A haunted house is not familiar. You know, those aren't characters that you know and love.
If you've never been on the Haunted Mansion, you haven't been exposed to that.
I have a relationship with a haunted mansion.
I think it's the quality of effects, though. Like, if you're going through a haunted mansion, you're not going to be able to get those ghosts projected so well into the dance scene. Or I think of Snow White when the witch turns around mm-hmm. and looks different from what it looks in the mirror. Like, that is a level of effect you're not going to get in your standard
haunted house.
So
level of artistry and
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you guys think?
The other thing, too, what I'm going to add is consistency. Each time you go on the Haunted Mansion, you can expect certain things. Whereas going to, you know, just a run-of-the-mill haunted house, it's not the same each time.
Well, I don't know if Hatbox Ghost is going to be there every time, though.
He might have to, disappear. You never know.
Well, if you want to talk about...
You know, he's very worried about his head, but what about that hat? Maybe he needs to go find his hat.
So what do you guys think? What to you makes a good dark ride? What is your definition of a dark ride? Please let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, on Twitter at DL Weekly. Send us an email at feedback@disneyweekly.com. Let us know what you think.
Ooh, I just had a brilliant idea.
Sure.
New ride, whatever. New theming for a new dark ride.
Okay.
Right? So we've already talked about Princess and the Frog, which would be amazing.
Sure.
What about Hocus Pocus?
Hocus Pocus would be a good dark ride.
I'm not sold on Hocus Pocus as a dark ride.
What type of attraction would Hocus Pocus do?
I don't know. Like I relate the dark ride so much to the animated style movies that I think a real life one would be hard to portray.
Okay, then Nightmare Pirates Before Christmas. That was a movie after it was a dark ride, so we don't count that. Nightmare Before Christmas as a dark ride.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that practically is a dark ride in and of itself.
Any of the, not all the Tim Burton films are Disney owned, but any of those stop film animation movies would be amazing dark rides.
See, I don't know if all of them have enough iconic music to really carry you through it, though. So
Nightmare Before Christmas definitely does.
Yeah.
And I really do think if they are going to make a movie themed attraction anytime soon, it needs to be, I think that Princess and the Frog deserves a dark ride. That would be a very amazing magical journey. And Coco.
Oh, Coco would be a great
attraction. Coco would be a great dark ride.
Yeah. Coco would be amazing. Like, I don't know where you would put that. It. It'd probably have to go over in California Adventure somewhere. I don't know where that would fit in Disneyland.
Why couldn't you put it somewhere?
Frontierland?
There's no room for it, but why couldn't you put it in Frontierland?
Frontierland would be the only area you could.
Yeah, because they already have the area for Dia de los Muertos. They do there.
Nobody hurt me, but what if you took out the shooting gallery? Would that be enough space?
I don't think that's enough space.
No.
Now we take a trip back to Trivia Land, where producer James is going to provide us with the answers to our Stump the Disney Trivia Nerds.
Yeah, so apparently the not-so-easy one.
questions.
So the Yeti and the Matterhorn is a recycled animatronic from which attraction? And what did you guess?
I guessed America Sings, because there was a million animatronics.
Abraham Lincoln.
In a stunning turn of events, it's not Abraham Lincoln.
Man.
Patron supporter Tim actually got it right in the Discord chat. They were gorillas in the Jungle Cruise.
What? Good job.
Yeah. Nice work, Tim.
Gorillas in the Jungle Cruise. Yes. Interesting. I guess that makes sense.
Ooh, yeah.
Now that I really think of it, everything.
This
is my problem, and that I've had this rude awakening ever since we just had that Disneyland auction. I really thought a lot of these animatronics did not get cycled through and recycled out as often as they do. So that's why I didn't think of a current attraction, because to me, those gorillas we've seen have been there for all of eternity. They haven't swapped them out.
You know, I wonder if, because one of the things that they've said numerous times was that there's a name, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but the elephant that's in the bathing pool that's under the waterfall taking a bath. Mm-hmm. I remember for the 50th anniversary, the Jungle Cruise had a line where they said she's been taking a bath for 50 years.
Yeah.
But now I feel like that might be false if they swapped her out, because then they still
they talk about how the elephant's been taking a bath for X amount of years. But yeah, unfortunately, I'm not so certain that's true anymore. I really was under the impression that a lot of these classic animatronics that were there when Walt put them there, in essence, were still the original animatronics.
You know what we're going to have to do?
Research it.
No, when we go to the parks, we're gonna have to find a lead, and we're gonna have to be like, tell us.
We need the truth.
What is original to this attraction?
Because I was just flabbergasted that there was a Jose animatronic up for sale at that auction. I thought for sure that Jose had been sitting on his little perch for however many years. It just, I couldn't believe it.
I agree with you. I think it's funny how you're wording that, but I totally agree with you.
So that was like a extra good question, because I don't think Tag and I were thinking along the lines of things that would still be there.
See, that's what you're doing. You're getting us in one mindset, and then you're taking us in a different direction.
Gotta be a good quiz master.
He's stumping us.
All right, number two.
All right, it's an estimate. How many churros are sold annually in the parks?
What did I say? I think I said 5.6.
I think I said like 1.2 or something
like
that.
Those are the answers you gave. If you meet somewhere in the middle, you get there. It is about 2.8 million churros.
That's a lot of freaking churros.
That is a lot
of churros. I'm surprised it's only that many.
2.8. Of the 2.8 million that they sell, if they sell for $4 a piece, they make $11.2 million off of churros.
Big bucks.
Okay, three. Right.
Question number three. This was our submitted question from Samantha and Bo.
A very good submitted question, very good. I may add.
Hidden Mickeys are everywhere in Disneyland, but what is the location of the only hidden Donald Duck?
I said Main Street.
I said Pirates.
It is by the piano in Mickey's house at Toontown.
Ooh.
So where's the hidden Walt?
We didn't answer that one.
Yeah, but I'm
answering. Oh, James's question.
Is it by the firehouse?
No. Teresa, one guess.
The hidden Walt.
Yep.
Is it carved into that tree?
World. Nope. Nope. It is in the crystal shop in New Orleans Square. And it's above. It's on the wall.
Dang it! I
and
did know that.
In. Yeah, there
as
you go.
As soon as you said that, dang.
All right, question four.
All right, in honor of our anniversary, who are the married announcers of both the parks?
And we
Mrs. Disneyland and Mr. Disney California Adventure.
I would flip those around for prefixes, and you're probably in a better track.
Okay, who is it?
It is Bill Rogers and Camille Dixon. Yeah, they met when. It was back in the early 2000s, and they dated for 10 years, and they got married.
You know, there's a lot of cute stories. There's a lot of cute little romances that bud from Disney or Disneyland in particular. Wasn't it the original voice of Mickey and Minnie ended up being a married couple? And I believe that there was a cast member that played Wendy and a cast member that played Peter Pan that ended up getting married as well.
You know, there's a lot of relationships that started from non-character
people
too. So
yes, definitely.
Not to leave that out, but wouldn't it be awesome to live next door to the people who are the voice of Disneyland? Can you imagine? Get off my lawn! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get off my lawn.
Please pick up after your dog. Well, if you want to have a voice in the podcast and our discussion topics, please head over to DisneylandWeekly.com and click the discussion topic link at the top to register your vote for the next discussion topic. We have already removed the topics that we are integrating and have spoken about already. We have been getting a lot of great responses, so please help be a part of the future of the show.
Yep, so also note that if you don't see a topic you're interested in, there is a field at the bottom that you could type in, and anything that's added there, we do add as an option. So please, anything you want to think of that you want talked about in the show, maybe somebody else agrees with you, and we'll also vote for it. So you can vote as many times as you want, and you can vote every week, because, again, we're going to choose new stuff every week, so get out there and vote. We love seeing reviews on iTunes, plus it helps get our ranking better so more people can find us and join the community. If you want to join in the conversation, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/DisneylandWeekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, on Instagram at instagram.com/DL Weekly, or by sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Just a reminder, if you have trivia, send it to producer@DisneylandWeekly.com, and James will get that. Feel free to email, Facebook, Instagram, comment, or tweet us any questions, feedback, or suggestions you have about the show. The feedback that we receive will be discussed on the listener feedback specials that we record and post monthly.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.